Hi, beautiful people, and welcome back to another episode of Unicorns Do Exist. I am your host, Vanessa. Whew, happy Pride Month. I still consider myself a lesbian and part of the LGBTQ. I mean, if I'm bi, I'm still part of the LGBTQ. But, okay. And in honor of Pride Month, I wanted to talk about something that it has always been very important to me, and that is mental health and advocating for everyone's mental health. And I feel like we have a lot of mental health issues in the LGBT community because of acceptance and self-love. I recently had to defend myself and my mental state because someone tried to use that against me. For a long time, I chose to pretty much stay quiet because I didn't want to make people uncomfortable. And not only that, we're also taught to stay quiet as women, to not stir the pot or stay quiet to keep the peace. But what I've learned is that when you're always keeping the peace, sometimes it's not your peace that you're protecting. It's theirs. Recently, someone tried to use one of the hardest chapters of my life against me, which is a mental health struggle that I had in 2018. And the saddest part is that it was used to try to take my son away from me. They try to paint the picture that because of this episode in 2018, which I will get into in a minute, I wasn't fit to be a parent. Whew. And that's when I realized, I'm not ashamed of my story. It never happened. I survived anxiety, I've survived depression, I survived two mental hospital stays. I've survived some of the darkest moments of my life. And I'm not hiding that. We're going to talk about it. Because if sharing my story helps one person feel less alone, then every uncomfortable conversation is worth having. And if my story helps one person feel less alone, then making these people feel uncomfortable is definitely worth it. So let's get into it. We know that as Hispanic culture, women, we're taught to no digas nada, quédate callada. For a long time, that was what my mom would tell me when my dad would start acting up or drinking or just yelling so that he would calm down and so that he wouldn't get more angry at us and not make it a bigger deal. And I did it for a long time until I got in high school, and then I was like, hell no, I don't care. I remember I would always talk back. Obviously, it was worse because I would get it a bigger smack in the face for it, for saying, por no contestando. But I didn't care. I honestly, it was like I was done. Or like not telling everybody what happened in our house and things like that. And unfortunately, I know that this probably still happens. There's probably still a lot of people who tell their daughters, no quédate callada, no digas, no contestes, no le rezongues, no le hables, like simply because you're trying to avoid a bigger conflict or a bigger fight. And I get it, but that's not always the best or correct way to do it. Or people a lot of the times are afraid to say, I need help or get therapy because of the stigma about it. And that is not what we're doing anymore. That is not how these things actually get solved. I was just talking to my mom and we were just talking about one of my cousins. Well, he wasn't my cousin, but I grew up with them. To me, they were like my cousins. He was a twin and he came up in a conversation. He hung himself a couple years ago and he was a twin and I knew him. I grew up with him. They were actually like los compadres of my parents. And that is what I'm trying to prevent. If instead of being worried about the stigma of going to therapy, I rather save someone's life, for example, not me per se, but if he would have gone help, if he would have gone to therapy. And others, we have all these what ifs. Now that he's gone. But I'm pretty sure his parents would rather have their son here en vez de preocuparse por el que dirán. So I'm sure my mom is glad I'm here. And once again, the people that matter don't care. The people that care don't matter, kind of thing. So my mom matters to me and my sisters matter, and me getting help and me have being labeled crazy for a while, I'm sure they're okay with it as long as I'm still here and I got the help that I needed and I'm continuously working towards getting better. With that being said, last month, they filed for a temporary restraining order against me because I broke my ex's windshield in 2018. But she failed to tell the rest of the story. So when she petitioned for the restraining order, she just stated that I broke her windshield in 2018 because I was drunk and out of control. And that was it. She also stated it was in 2022, which she was probably just mistaken about the time frame again. Who knows? Let's give her the benefit of the doubt. But it was true. I did break the windshield, but it was in 2018. And it was because a week prior to that, a police officer came to my door where I lived in Riverside and told me that they've got a mattress hit for my my rape kit that I had in 2011. A long time had gone by. The incident happened in 2011. Now it's 2018. It was August of 2018, I remember, when they knocked and they told me, hey, we got a hit. We got a match on your rape kit. Do you mind coming to the police station to pick them off from a lineup? I honestly had kind of forgotten about it. I did this thing where I guess you like put it in the back of your mind and forget it ever happened. So I didn't remember a lot of the incident. I almost felt like that wasn't me. That didn't happen to me. But when the police officer came and told me, I was like, oh shit, that did happen. Once again, still not remembering the whole story. I decided to go do the right thing. You know, I've been watching a lot of Law and Order and SVU. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go. Especially if I'm guessing that the reason why he was tested was because he did it to somebody else. It was another person besides me. It's a recent person, another woman. So I was like, yeah, if I can help, why not? I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to show up. So my ex at the time was like, are you sure? Like, it's not going to be too much. And I was like, no, I'm going to do it. Like, it's the right thing. Like, I should do it. I should go and try to pick. I mean, I don't remember what he looked like. I still don't remember. But I'm going to try. So I go to the police station in Anaheim. And I go in with the detective. It was just me by myself. She came with me, but she wasn't allowed in. So it was just me by myself. And he proceeds to show me the picture. No, first he tells me, first, he's like, I'm going to read back to you your statement from 2011. And I was like, okay, sure. And he starts reading the statement, what I said happened to me. And everything just came flashing back because I was like, I don't remember much. He's like, well, let me read it to you, see if you remember more things, like more things come to you. So I was like, yeah, sure, read it to me. I'm stronger now. I'm like, I've done so much therapy and I'm more mature. I'm in a such better place. When I tell you that, I was not expecting all that. I was just, I was froze. I couldn't even get him to stop talking. I was trying in my mind, I was like, don't read anymore. Like, I can't, like, there's no way. And as he was reading it, I was literally playing it in my head, like, oh my God, this really happened. This really happened. I was baffled. Sorry, I had to take a little break. It's still hard to talk about it. It's still a little emotional for me, even though I have come a long way and I have overcome the situation. But sometimes it still gets a little knot in my throat. But yeah, let's see. He read it back to me. Everything came back. I remembered so much that I had forgotten. So that was very traumatic. It was kind of like when they say you pretty much relived it again. I relived it and I relived it there at the police station. After that, I felt like I had done the right thing. And so she also was like, oh, I'm so proud of you for coming and so brave of you and strong of you to come and try to help put this person in prison. However, I wasn't able to identify him. The people that they showed me all look the same, kind of. They all look the same, but then again, I had never seen any of them. Like, they all looked familiar, but I couldn't tell you who it was. And I'm glad, honestly, I'm glad. I would not want to remember that face. But nonetheless, that was still very traumatizing. So she decided, let's go have dinner and celebrate what you did and how proud I am of you. I said, great. That sounds awesome. Let's do it. I had too much to drink that night. And I didn't tell her how traumatizing it was for me. I didn't vocalize it. I was just like, I'm good. You know, I'm good. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. The toxic positivity that I was brainwashed to show back then, that's just how she was. She was like, everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine, and kind of like sweep it under the rug. So instead of telling her how I felt, I said, yeah, I'm fine, I'm great, let's go get some dinner, drinks, celebrate. And throughout, at the end of the night, I guess I had a psychotic break or a PTSD psychotic episode, where my body was reliving what was going on. So I started in the car kicking, like if I was kicking somebody off me, which is what I guess I was doing, which is what I guess I was doing when I was being raped. My rape was a long time ago. In 2011, someone spiked my drink and then they carried me out of a club. Literally walked me out of the club and left me in a motel room, pretty much like for dead. I woke up with no cell phone, no shoes, no wallet, nothing. Back in the day, there were still taxis, so I asked for a taxi. But that's a story for a different day. Either way, that was in 2011 when they got a hit for the rape in 2018, from being read the statement, from the drinking, from everything, I went into a psychotic episode, and I did. I kicked the windshield. I broke it. Thank God we got home safe. So that is why that happened. She told me that I was kicking and screaming. I don't remember doing it. I don't remember the kicking or any of it. The next day, she told me what I did, and I obviously felt guilty. I felt horrible. I felt disgusted with myself, not only with what I did, but knowing that it wasn't just an idea that I was raped. I was confirmed that I was because of the DNA that was recovered. All of that compound together was horrible. After that, we decided to break up. I couldn't be in a relationship. I needed to go and heal myself. The next day, I called the police station. I said, hey, I do need, because they said if you need help and resources, call us, it will help you. So I did. I called them. I went back and I started getting counseling for the actual rape. She came with me a couple times to the counseling sessions. I literally had to rebuild myself all over again. I remember I left her house. I moved out. I moved back to the desert. I lived with my sister for about 6 months. And just worked on my mental state. That's why I'm always grateful for my family, because if it wasn't for them, I think I'd probably be homeless in the street, crazy or something. They've always been my rocks. They've always been my biggest inspiration to get help and do better, as well as they've taken care of me so, so much. And I'm very grateful for them. Even though I'm the oldest, there was a time where they were my caregivers, kind of thing. Thank God that I did the work. I woke up every day. I started my medication. I kept going to therapy. And it's still something that I think I'm always going to have to work on, especially when things come up that trigger it. But it's not something I'm ashamed of. It's not something that should ever be used against you. And that's why it was so heartbreaking. I don't want to say heartbreaking, because there's no more heart to break. I think she broke what was left. But I do think it is very, it's just disappointing. Disappointing, sad, embarrassing almost, like pena ajena, to know that the person I literally spent 10 years with would use this in court to try to take my son from me. It was just, this is like the lowest of the lowest things that you could possibly do. And I never thought she would do it. Okay, but there we go. Now we, it was done. Yeah, just very disappointing and sad. But like I said, since it was in 2018, we were still not even domestic partners. During those 6 months, she would come down to the desert and visit me. She would come down to the desert and spend time with me, help me. She said she did her own research on PTSD and mental health and things like that, that she now understood. And I told her, look, it's not easy. It's never going to go away, probably. Like, if you love me, you're going to love me like this forever. And it's not going to be easy. But I promise you that I will always do my best to get the help that I need. I would start my medication and follow it and learn habits and learn ways to cope and become a better human. And I did. That's exactly what I did. After the 6 months, she asked me to move back in. She said she was proud of me for my growth and how far I've come. Definitely saw a difference in my attitude, my emotional, mental state. Like, we, from there, after that is when we decided to become domestic partners. After that, we decided to have a child. My son was born in 2023. This happened in 2018. So for her to try to, one, say happened in 2022 and use it against me, weaponize it, and drag it into the spotlight was just distasteful. Let's just say distasteful. But hey, thank God the judge saw past it. Thank God that the judge understood what was happening and dismissed everything. Thank God. And once again, I am not ashamed of it. I regret that I ever got to that point in my life. But I am proud of the steps that I took after that to be where I am now. I'm proud of the fact that I got myself out of that black hole and became stronger because of it. Because my mental state is now something that I protect a lot. I protect it so much. And because of it, I developed so many other ways and habits to cope. Everyone heals differently. There's different ways and different tools and options out there. It's not always easy. I remember at one point I did tell my mom to take me back to a mental hospital because of the fact that I felt like I needed a lot of support and help, and I didn't want to put that on my family. And because I had already been to a mental hospital and it helped, I felt like maybe this is what I need again. But thank God that when I got there, they said, like, oh, you're very aware of your emotions and you're very aware of the patterns that we don't think you need to be here. We just think you need to start therapy and medication. And so I did. I started the therapy and I started the medication. And I've continued to go to therapy, especially when life throws lemons at you. I know not a lot of people believe in medication. I found that it does help me a lot. Not only is it because of the PTSD, but also because I have ADHD. There you go. Hence why I'm all over the place. But it helped me. I know that therapy is a must. Medication is, everyone is different. Some people feel like it doesn't do anything to them, and some people, they are grateful to be on it. It takes time to find what works for you. Please always go with a professional. But for me, it has helped a lot. But most importantly, what has helped the most and always will help the most is my behavior. Learning coping skills. Learning what I can and cannot do. When I can and cannot drink. I know that if I just had a big fight with her, I probably shouldn't be drinking. I'm not going to do it. I've learned which people trigger me, which people don't. I've learned that working out is the ultimate best way for me to stay in a good state, to feel empowered, to feel strong, to release any sort of negative energy or stress that I may have. Hiking, touching grass, being in the wilderness, being in the nature, like trees, going on a hike is extremely important for me, as well as journaling, affirmations, writing all these negative thoughts, writing things down. And understanding my body, most importantly. Recently, my nephew also asked me about anxiety and how I was able to deal with it and how I learned to cope with it. And because my family knows what I've been through and they're very proud of my growth as well. And I'm very proud of it. And I'm never going to be ashamed or quiet about it, because this is exactly why I do it. My nephew literally asked me, hey, how do you deal with anxiety? I was very, very, very grateful that he felt comfortable enough to bring it up to me and ask me, and I was able to talk to him about it. He's very young. And so it did make me a little sad to know that he was feeling, having these emotions. However, I told him they're nothing to be ashamed of. I know everyone's a little different. Everyone's going to get a little form of anxiety, but anxiety is a way of your body telling you to pay attention to your surroundings, to pay attention to yourself, to your thoughts. It's like a fire alarm. This is the best way I heard. It's like a fire alarm. If there's smoke, that fire alarm is going to go off and it's going to be an annoying sound, but it's going to save your house. It's going to save your life. It's telling you, hey, something's going on. There is something burning. It's a warning. It's letting you know, hey, wake up, wake up. Something is not okay, whether it's your habits, whether it's the people around you, whether it's, hey, you need to do a change physically or emotionally or your surroundings. That is anxiety. That's the way I see it now. Instead of fighting it, take a minute and say, okay, what is going on and why did this come up? There's different types. Like I said, there's different types of anxiety. When you're about to jump off a bridge, like bungee jumping, you get all these emotions and feelings in a rush, and okay, it's normal because you're doing something scary. If you're going to do public speaking, that's another big one. He is telling me that he has track and field. And so I'm like, okay, well, when that starts to come up, ask yourself, is this an irrational fear or irrational fear? Meaning, am I going to die? If people are staring at me, am I going to die because they're staring at me? No, it's normal. It happens. We all feel it. Sometimes it's being aware of it is enough to calm it down. Two, being aware of it and talking to yourself. I talk to myself all the time. I literally tell myself, it's okay. You're safe. Nothing's going to happen. Or it's okay. You got this. You got this. That alone is retraining your nervous system to be stronger. It's just like when a dinosaur would come that would give us anxiety to run, which is the adrenaline to run to save our lives. We still, our bodies are still built that way. Our brain is still built that way. So it wants to keep us safe. Paying attention to it, asking yourself, hey, is this going to kill me? Yes, run. No, okay. I will develop the muscle to be stronger. And it's never going to go away because it's a safety mechanism. Instead of running from it, face it. Don't just push it down. So many people are trained to ignore it, push it away. Don't let it affect you. But that's not realistic. It's going to affect you. It's never going to go away. So instead of teaching our kids, our boys, each other to just ignore it, push it away, don't bring it up, don't talk about it, we need to be able to recognize it, talk about it, and solve it. That's what's going to make it actually go away, like actually solve the issue. Feeling comfortable enough to talk about it with other people, that's what I want. There's been so many incidents where men, especially men that I know, have gone through such ugly periods of time simply because they were too afraid to talk about it or too ashamed. And understanding that some days are going to be better than others. There is no perfect way to fix depression, anxiety, PTSD. Everyone's different. But no one's going to be able to do it for you unless you are willing to do the work yourself. it's very important that you realize that you want to do it for yourself. There's days where I cope by going to the gym, and there's days that I cope by having drinks with my friends or going on a hike or taking a nap. There's so many different ways, and only you are going to know what is best for you once you start to practice and become aware of what triggers you. It's not the first time someone asks me about anxiety or depression. And I hope it's not the last, because that's what this is for. I want everyone to have someone they can reach out to. I want my family to know that I'm their biggest advocate, that I'm always going to be here to love them and support them. That just because you're feeling like this today doesn't mean that you're going to like be like that forever. It gets better. Every day it gets better, because every day you get better. Every day you get stronger. Probably someone's going to cry. And who knows, maybe one of these days I won't need someone to talk to again. And that's okay. Because Diosito no nos da nada que no podamos soportar. Diosito no nos da nada que no podamos overcome. And this is not a sad podcast, okay? This is not a sad episode. This is a happy episode, because at the end of the day, we're here, we're alive, we have each other. And I'm just such a Yona. That's it. So I continue to tell my story. I continue to show up so that other people know that they're not alone. You are not alone. And you have nothing to be ashamed of, because I don't know anyone who has not overcome something and that didn't make them stronger. Anxiety isn't a weakness. Depression is not failure. Asking for help is a strength. And the hard chapters in your story do not define your future. Do not define your ending. Do not define who you are. They're just that. They're just a chapter. They're just a moment in time. There's just something that you had to go through to be able to get to the other side. I was hesitant to tell the story or to talk about the restraining order, because I do want to protect my son and I do want him to always have the best idea of his mother. But at the same time, I want him to know how much he is loved. Just like I'm not ashamed of my story, I'm not ashamed of who I chose as the other parent for my son. Because at the end of the day, I still believe that there is good in them. It's probably just clouded with anger right now. And I'm not making an excuse. I'm not making excuses for them. Because at the end of the day, I chose them. I chose them to have a child with them. And I do believe that God doesn't make mistakes. And I also wanted to talk about it during this Pride Month, because I know that there is a lot of people in the LGBT community that suffer from acceptance, depression, anxiety. And that at one point, me coming out was a reason of my depression and anxiety and not feeling good enough. But to all the young people that are maybe going through this or suffering or thinking that there is no way out, there is. There is always a way out. And you don't always have to know how to get there. You just have to want to continue to fight for yourself. Ask for help. For years, I thought that taking medication was something I had to hide. My mental health struggles were something I had to hide. Now I realize that they're just proof of how strong I can be and I am. And I definitely refuse to be ashamed of the fact that I fought harder than anyone simply just to be here. Harder than anyone I know to be a mom. And I didn't just fight for my siblings, but I fought for myself. Because I do believe that at a certain point, you have to take control of your life. If you're 122, you're no longer a child. You're responsible for you, your actions, and the way you show up in the world. And there's tons of resources. Even if you feel alone, there's always someone available. If you ever feel like you can't talk to anyone, dial 911. They'll answer. But I refuse to be ashamed of the fact that I fought for myself, I got help, I healed, and I kept going. Because that isn't weakness, that is resilience. I continue to be proud of where I am and what I've done. most importantly, I continue to be proud of how strong my mind is now. And trust me, it wasn't always like that. But I know a strong mindset is something you can develop. And before I go, I want to leave you with this. The world will try to convince you that your struggles make you less valuable, that your anxiety, your depression, your mistakes make, and your scars somehow make you broken. But I've learned the opposite. The people who choose to keep going after life knocks them down over and over again, the people who are not afraid to ask for help, the people who do the hard work and start healing, the people who choose to stay here on this earth when it feels easier to just give up. Those are the rare ones. Those are the unicorns I'm talking about. So if you're listening to this and you're fighting a battle nobody else can see, if you're showing up to therapy, taking your meds, and doing the work, or simply making it through another day that feels impossible, remember that unicorns do exist. And you, my love, are one of them. Now go drink some water, take your meds, go touch grass, and stop taking life advice from people who think healing is for the weak. Stop taking life advice from people who haven't been through anything worth talking about. Until next week, keep being magical. Bye.